Welcome to Current Affairs Taiwan. Mike, what's coming up on the show today?
Well, we got Matsu in statues in Penghu and Taichung and her role in the United Front effort against Taiwan. We've got some discussion of Han Guoyer, as always. And we also talk about the Milk Tea Alliance and Taiwan's increasing warm power and how it's become a more attractive and interesting and higher profile nation in the last few months. Stay tuned. It's going to be a great show.
And don't forget, two, not one, but two decapitated heads.
Not mine and Donovan's.
Warm power. Warm and snuggly power. Makes me think of tying one in her cats.
Hello, folks. Hello once again. Welcome to Current Affairs Taiwan. I'm co-host Michael Turton, and with me is co-host Donovan Smith, he of the deep voice and deeper sense of humor.
All right, so great to be here.
So what do we got on tap today?
Well, you've got the topic list, but if memory serves, we're kicking off with the massive Matsu story. And I'm really looking forward to hearing what you have to say about it. I talked a little bit about that on the Taiwan Report news brief the other day.
Well, I know there's two of them, right? Penghu and mm-hmm. Taichung are competing now to see who can build the biggest Matsu.
Mm-hmm.
We're supposed to like give a slew of phallic comments at this point. I think we can just take those as read. Statue envy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the original one, you know, the first one was in Taichung years ago. Jason Hu, the mayor before Lin Jialong, who was the mayor before the current mayor, Liu Xiaoyan, had proposed that along with the penguins, which is still my favorite proposal of Jason Hu's. And
the Penguin Pavilion.
Well, one of the reasons that they had the lurking reason behind all this Matsu competition to see who can build the biggest statue is that Matsu is an important nexus of cross-strait annexation activity, the Matsu cult. And so the big Matsu temple in Daja, of course, is run by politicians who are closely linked to the KMT, and the first boat to cross the strait to openly and legally cross the strait since 1949 was a Matsu vessel with people headed by the right-hand man of the head of the Junlan Matsu Temple in Daja, Yan Qingbiao's right-hand man. I forgot his name, Chen something. Anyway, so that was the first boat to cross the Taiwan Strait, and it shows how important Matsu is in China's program to annex Taiwan. And there have been some, as a result, some of the Matsu temples in Taiwan and other temples that are connected to China have gone back to China and performed ceremonies that can sever their link somehow. A friend of mine told me about it, and I wish I could remember what he'd said. But anyway, so part of this, you note that both the mayors that have proposed this, the one of Penghu has proposed the giant statue there, and Jason Hu were both KMT mayors.
Right.
And so they were right. They were part of that pro-China nexus that Matsu represents. And their justification was that people would come to see the giant Matsu statue. It would be a great tourism draw.
Mm-hmm. And from where?
They would come from everywhere, including mainland, right? Or
yep.
China, as we call it.
Yeah. I mean, there's some local tourism and Southeast Asian ones. But when Jason Hu originally proposes, he was talking about attracting specifically Chinese tourism.
Right, right.
And to make Taichung the world center, because it's the origin of the Dajia Jinlan Matsu Temple pilgrimage, which is the
right.
biggest Matsu pilgrimage. And so he wanted to build the statue. The statue itself was supposed to be 70 meters tall. And this is a little bit of the background here. So he proposed building this, and then it was going to have a big 10-meter tall, if memory serves, 10 or 11-meter tall base, which also served as kind of a building, you know, information center. And then put this into a big park, a big Matsu culture park. And he got the budget for the base the information building and the big park. But they wouldn't give him the funds, in part because opposition from Christian groups. They didn't get the funding for the statue itself. So the whole thing has been built, and it was completed under Lin Jialong.
Because, you mean the platform, of course, the budget was built?
Yeah, so there's this platform there, this whole park waiting for this statue. And the thing in total was, I think, 81 meters tall, including the stand. I mean, this thing was massive. And it's in Da'an, the Da'an district, just right to the south of the Dajia Jinnan Matsu Temple in the Dajia district. And so it's right there on the coast. And of course, they want to have this giant statue of Matsu looking there longingly at her homeland in Fujian, China. So that's the background for the audience. Now, the Penghu one, I think it may have actually been proposed earlier in 2011, again under the KMT. And I know a little bit less about this one, but essentially, again, there was an intervening DPP mayor or county commissioner in Penghu, and they didn't pick up the plan. Now, in Taichung, they were supposed to use private funds to build the statue, and they never raised enough money. So now there's KMT leaders in both, and the Penghu one, they just want to build the head first. So there'll be a giant decapitated Matsu head in Penghu if he gets this through. Now, in Taichung, the mayor Lu Xiaoyin and a bunch of Taichung city councilors from the KMT are now reviving the statue plan, and they want to get money out of the city council, and it's moving forward. So the question is, will they pass it? Because Jason Hu failed to get it passed. So we don't know yet, but I have some questions as to the timing, and I'm kind of wondering if it's the coronavirus crisis has got them all thinking about Matsu.
Yeah. Well, I hopefully none of this will come to fruition. And the economic driver, the Chinese tourism, has, of course, ceased probably for quite a long time to come.
Yeah.
So I don't expect that the busloads of Chinese tourists are going to go out to see the statue, spend a ton of money, then drive over to the Penguin Pavilion and spend another ton of money. and then maybe they'll go up to Da'an to ride the proposed Da'an monorail. right outside Taichung City there.
All these Jason Hu plans that never happened. Yeah. Oh, actually, the monorail was actually kind of a cool idea, because the idea was fairly clever, in fact, because you could take the high-speed rail down to Taichung, and then that connects to the MRT, which will open later this year. And then at the end of that, that's when you could get on the monorail and go all the way up to Dongshi. And then they were planning to revive a narrow gauge rail line, kind of like an Alishan, that used to run up there. They wanted to revive that so you could get all the way up into Guguan. That was the original plan.
I see. So then those Chinese tourists would never have made it out to the East Coast. Well, when they got out there, they wouldn't have had any money left to spend, right?
They'd right.
Been thoroughly drained. But the main thing is always, for me, has been watching how Matsu has been incorporated into China's drive to annex Taiwan, how it's an important vector of that cross-strait religious relations. And, you know, mm-hmm. that's parallel with the cross-strait Hakka thing and a number of other stuff that's sort of cross-strait cultural exchanges and things like that. They function as part of the United Front effort against Taiwan.
Yeah, and a lot of these temples get money from China. And yeah,
I've heard that.
Well, there was that Al Jazeera report where they traced some of that. And so then these temples have, and some of them have been very explicitly pro-annexation,
right.
As they put it, reunification. But then, of course, they're using, Matsu and Hakka and all these things to say to everybody, we're just all one big, happy, ethnic Chinese family. And the KMT used that, obviously, during the martial law era and in the education to remind everybody in Taiwan their ethnic Chinese roots, if they actually had them.
Well, it's funny to set Matsu against what's happening now with the World Health Assembly, which is going to start in virtual format from May 18th and 19th, in which Taiwan is trying to get into against Chinese objections.
There was, and a lot of countries now are coming out in favor of Taiwan's at least being allowed to be an observer.
Right. The U.S. started a big push this week on Twitter and elsewhere.
That's huge.
And apparently the U.N. representatives from nations that recognize the ROC are going to all have a collective sit down with WHO Director General Tedros to discuss this with him, which is good. This is the kind of thing that the WHA should be permissible. And somehow pressure needs to be put on China for that. But, you know, we've only got, what, 14 days now? 15 days?
Yeah, I mean, and Taiwan has officially sent in the request. But yeah, the U.S. tweeting its support and Pompeo expressing support. Canada has summoned Bruce Aylward, that WHO official, who famously shut down that conversation with the Hong Kong journalist, pretending basically, "Oh, I didn't hear that," or "What are you talking about?" Or, you know, he closed the chat window to avoid talking about Taiwan. And the Canadian House of Commons apparently passed a unanimous motion to summon him to talk about various issues, but including that, because he's a Canadian national.
Fabulous.
Yeah, so he's going to probably be grilled in front of the Canadian House of Commons. And it's, of course, it's a parliament, so they tend to be a more sharp elbowed than, say, U.S. legislators would be.
Sure, sure. There was another thing that emerged this week also involving Taiwan's soft power, which was the Milk Tea Alliance. Mm-hmm. What is this?
Well, it started out, there was an actor in, I think it's a drama that plays in, it's a sort of like a co-China-Thailand thing or something like that anyway. He tweeted out something which the 50 Cent Army freaked out about. He took down the tweet and apologized. But his girlfriend, who had the Nanevi is her online handle. So all these, that she had some things posted up before on her Twitter, which suggested that Taiwan is a country and, you know, talking about Hong Kong. And so the 50 centers in China went nuts attacking her and the actor. And well, in response, a whole ton of Thai netizens came out and started fighting back. And then they were joined by people from Hong Kong and Taiwan. And now it seems to be even expanding. I saw graphics showing adding Australia and possibly India into this. And basically, each country is represented by their tea, like Taiwan is bubble milk tea. And so essentially, it's this pan-Asian group of netizens fighting the 50 Cent Army. So it's kind of a free country netizen army going to war with the 50 centers. And of course, they've been really funny, coming up with tons of funny memes. And of course, the 50 centers are so unimaginative and so unused to freedom that they're just getting their ass handed to them. And they try and attack the Thai government. And, you know, and the Thais are like, "Yeah, okay, go for it. Hey, we're fine with that." And so, but what's really quite, I personally think that's really fascinating and quite important about this is China keeps trying to promote itself as kind of the leader of Asia against the West. And so they can extend their influence. But now, big chunk of East Asia and possibly South Asia now have banded together to fight back against them. And they're doing it talking an awful lot about things about like freedom, press freedom, freedom of speech, these kinds of attacks on the Chinese 50 centers who are trying to get over the Great Firewall to fight this war. So it's really blown up in the face of the Chinese government. And they issued some statements which basically inflamed everybody even more. In typical, you know, PRC,
of course,
Communist
of
Party
course.
Speak.
Well, actually, you know, it shows there's a lot of sympathy out there for Taiwan and a growing, you know, contempt and hatred for China, especially among its close neighbors. So we'll see. Even today, there were reports that Europe's now rethinking its relations with China in the light of the virus and China's behavior, which will be good. China didn't do itself any favors with the shipments of equipment that was bad, that didn't work. So I think we're in the midst of a long sea change that actually began even before the Trump administration. The Trump administration really sort of, you know, brought it into the light. But there were a lot of people changing after, say, 2015. You know, there was a lot of criticism of the Obama administration's attitude towards China. And then when the U.S. started to change, China didn't learn anything from that.
No.
And so they've continued to behave in exactly the same way. And of course, they're not going to be making any new friends now.
No. I mean, it's Xi Jinping really has, he's doubled down on so many things, which the only word I can describe is evil. The concentration camps of the Uyghurs, the crackdown on dissent in other areas, the use of the surveillance state and social credit, the crackdowns in Hong Kong. And there's no ambiguity now. There was a time when it seemed like China was slowly moving toward opening up. And so it wasn't insane back then necessarily, although there were a lot of warning signs there that people should have been paying attention to and should have been more concerned about, but the country was opening up more at the time. Economically, socially, there was a little more and more free speech slowly. But that the brakes all were hit hard by Xi Jinping, and even a few years before him, that all seemed to just stop. And they started becoming more and more repressive and bullying. And it's so obvious and naked now. It doesn't help that they were locking down Wuhan while still allowing people from Wuhan to fly out overseas and spread the virus, which was not a very nice thing of them to do.
Yeah. There was another example of Taiwan's soft power this week was the, the Tweet for Taiwan campaign, right? Mm-hmm. That's the State Department thing. And an Indian journalist who specializes in India PRC relations. This is from Katie Lilly, who's one of my favorite tweeters. She caught this. This journalist had looked at 449 tweets, and 49% of them, like half, were from India. And I think I've noticed, and probably you have too, the last couple of months even, or the last month especially, we've had in the Taiwan History Group, we've had piles of people joining from India.
Yes.
So I think Taiwan is a big hit with India right now. It's a hot thing. And it's so great that we have this, what did they call it the other day? Warm power. You know, people really like Taiwan. They have positive attitudes toward it.
Mm-hmm. I've seen some really good articles being written out of India talking about Taiwan talking about the values that Taiwan has and that they hope that the Indian government will work much more closely with Taiwan.
Yeah.
I've seen an upsurge in that, and they're better written and better researched than they were in the past in a lot of cases.
There's some Indian journalists in the groups that I participate in on email groups. You know, there's several of them, and they're quite well-informed and sharp.
Mm. Mm-hmm. They probably wrote some of those articles that I'm thinking of.
So what's going on with the recall of KMT Mayor Han Guoyu in Kaohsiung?
Well, there was two things that cropped up. One is that WeCare, who are the organizers of the recall campaign, they came out and attacked the Han city government, the Kaohsiung Government Construction Bureau, and accused them of targeting their advertisements, the big canvas ads that they put up, and billboards, and selectively targeting the WeCare pro Han recall advertising and tearing it all down. Now, I also heard that apparently they were doing this at 5 a.m., and according to WeCare, all of their banners have been taken down, assuming that's correct. Now, I haven't seen any independent confirmation of that, but that's a pretty striking thing to say, that all of our ads have been taken down. And I'd heard that also from another source that it was all done at like 5 a.m, so there wouldn't be a lot of witnesses. But meanwhile, the pro Han advertisements are still up. Now, so there's that. Then the vice mayor of Kaohsiung, who's in charge of the Central Election Commission, the local version of it, he said that he's having a lot of trouble. Now, he did handle up to this point, he seems to have been handling it okay, in the sense that he, you know, when the signature collections came in, he passed them and all that. So he hasn't done anything outrageous, you know, on that front. But he said that up to this point, he's been only able to get about 2/3 the number of polling stations that they had for the 2018 mayoral election. So the national CEC head came down, and he said the target is explicitly to have the same number and ideally in the same locations of polling places as the 2018 election. So now he said, because some schools, for example, don't want to have more, they're not allowing more than 2 classrooms, for example. Now a lot of this just may be, you know, the coronavirus. So what the national guy said is that we're going to go and we'll talk to some national government offices and state-owned, you know, national universities and colleges. And he said, if we don't get them all, I'll decapitate myself. Kind of like that Matsu statue in Penghu, apparently. But anyway.
It's just a gigantic head now, right?
Well, he's trying to get the budget for that giant head. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh, my God.
I'm trying to figure out what they do with a giant decapitated head of Matsu. I know they want to build the whole statue at some point. He's just getting a budget for part of it. But I just had all these really funny images of what to do with this giant head of Matsu.
Oh, so what do you think is going to happen with this recall? You know, I used to think that the Kaohsiung people would give Han another shot, but the large number of votes that they collected, the large number of signatures they collected from the signature campaign have really made me rethink that position. Sorry.
Yeah. I mean, then there was that NPP poll, which showed that
the new power party poll.
Yeah. Now, I don't know how reliable their polling is, but their poll suggests, I think it was 44% of Kaohsiung residents or likely voters or something like that. I must admit, I forget the details, but they said they were going to vote in the recall vote, and another 20 some odd percent were seriously considering it. So if you say that half the people who are thinking of doing it show up, that'd be 50 some odd percent. You need 25% turnout for the vote to be valid. So it looks like they're going to get enough people, Kaohsiung residents, to go and vote in the recall vote for it to be a valid one. And it also, the polling also showed that a majority planned to vote for him to be recalled. Now, none of this is in the bag. The coronavirus, we could have another big outbreak in theory. Han supporters are maybe more loyal and may turn out in larger numbers. So we don't really know, but I'd say that Han's looking weak. There's a pretty good chance that they will vote him out. I don't think it's in the bag, but I think it's looking. What I think it's going to really come down to is all those really hardcore Han supporters. Are they still really hardcore Han supporters?
Yeah, that's a good question. Peak Han was, you know, last year in April. Mm-hmm. It was a long time ago. So I don't know. And if they come out, and a lot of the ones that you saw in a certain place have been bussed there. So I'm very curious to see whether Kaohsiung people are going to like, oh my God, did I really just vote for Han and come back and vote against him now? Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting to see.
Well, polling has shown that if the election, and this was from last year, even during peak Han, I remember there was a poll that came out in April or May that showed that if they'd reheld the Kaohsiung mayoral election and the Taichung mayoral election, the DPP candidates would have won in both cities. And that was before the big blowout election this January.
Right, right. Well, I guess that's... do we have anything else we want to talk about today?
Those are the topics I remember.
Right. Well, folks, thank you for checking in with us today. It's a slow news week, but we're still here to talk about it.
And we're still... And we're slow people, so, you know, it suits us well.
All right. Y'all have a good week ahead of you. See you next week.
This has been brought to you by the Taiwan Report. For more content like this, become our patron at report.tw.
哎呦，就是那个台湾狗啦，最喜欢我的台湾狗了。